This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, fallout from the Turkish election. Are Erdogan's wings clipped? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Voters dealt a major setback to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's campaign to consolidate power in an election last week that ended his Islamist-rooted government's 13-year majority rule. For Mr. Erdogan, who has dominated Turkish politics for a decade with a populist but rather polarizing message, the result marked the most stunning rebuke of his career. It effectively scuttled his bid to win a constitution-changing majority to further centralize his power. The ruling AKP, or Justice and Development Party, secured less than 41% of the vote, down from almost 50% in the previous general election. All three opposition parties joined together to oppose Erdogan's plans to shift Turkey, a key U.S. ally, from a parliamentary to a presidential system, a move he argued would increase government efficiency, but which they said would be a step toward dictatorship. Well, for more on the domestic and international fallout from the Turkish parliamentary elections, we turn to two distinguished regional analysts. Sinan Ciddi is a visiting assistant professor at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service, where he is an expert on Turkish domestic and foreign policy. He is the director of the Institute for Turkish Studies. His work includes articles along with a book on Turkish politics called Kemalism in Turkish Politics, Secularism, Nationalism, and the Republican People's Party. And Soner Çaptay. He's a senior fellow and director of the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He's also a valued and frequent commentator at these VOA microphones. He was a regular columnist for Hurriyet Daily News and a contributor to CNN's Global Public Square blog. He is the author of the recently published book, The Rise of Turkey, the 21st Century's First Muslim Power. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Soner Çaptay, let me begin with you. What, in your view, is the significance of the election results for Turkey? What message did the Turkish electorate send?
The takeaway of the elections for the governing Justice and Development Party, also known as AKP, is that the electorate, which had supported this party in three consecutive polls before, this time decided to not throw its support so strongly behind the AKP. The party still came out as the first, which means it has a plurality of the votes and a plurality of the seats in the parliament. But this is the first time since 2002 that the AKP does not have a majority of the seats in the Turkish legislative, which means it cannot form government on its own. It has to reach across the political aisle to find partners. So I guess this was the electorate's way of telling the AKP, we have liked some of what you have done, but perhaps it's time for you to form government with others. What else do we make of that? Turkey has, in the last decade, witnessed a dramatic economic transformation led by the government of Prime Minister Erdogan, who has since become the country's president, and his Justice and Development Party, AKP, has lifted many Turks out of poverty. The country was a country of mostly poor people when AKP came to power in 2002. Now it's a country of mostly middle-income people. And I think Erdogan and AKP were rewarded in the ballot box for that for over a decade. But this time, when things changed a little bit in the past few years, the electorate has shifted away. And I think one problem that they identified with Erdogan and AKP was increased authoritarianism, crackdown on the media and freedom of speech. So when given what I would call a not necessarily binary choice between freedom and democracy on the one hand and prosperity on the other, the electorate went for democracy. And I think that's a really, really good decision on behalf of democratic freedoms in Turkey.
Turning to you now, Sinan Ciddi, for your interpretation of the election results.
Yes, this is quite an unprecedented turnout of results for the political future of Turkey, because for the last 13 years, we're accustomed to a country which has been governed by one party, which has had such a tremendous impact on the lives of people, as Soner said, mainly an economic and transformational and infrastructural one, but also a party which has essentially dominated over Turkey, both politically, institutionally, for the last decade or more. And this was to some extent anticipated by some of the polling outlets out there, but overall, the actual result in which the AKP, the governing AKP, is no longer in power, has taken President Erdogan by quite a big surprise, I think, as well as his party, his former party, the Justice and Development Party, but also the opposition parties. So what we're left with now is a political field in which the former incumbent, the AKP, is having to come to terms with possibly taking the lead in forming a coalition government. But it's a party that is unaccustomed to building coalition governments. And this is sort of reminiscent of Turkey's political history of the past. But more significant, I think, is something that Soner has touched upon, I think, in terms of a victory for democracy. I think there has been a strong analysis in the past few years whereby Turkey, in the mid-2000s, a country which was propelled as a model for the Middle East, especially after the sort of ensuing Arab Spring revolutions, seemed to be taking such a strong road down towards authoritarian or autocratic rule because of the single-handed and heavy-handed rule of Erdogan's government and Erdogan's governing style. This seems to have been stopped by the voters. And this is, again, something which puts Turkey very much on the center stage of the Muslim world, especially saying that possibly democracy still is able to work in a predominantly Muslim country, a pluralist country such as Turkey, whereby voters still have the final say in who governs them.
So what I hear you both saying is that this is a setback for Erdogan and the AKP, but it appears to be a victory for democracy and for Turkey, the Turkish electorate. So back to you, Soner Çaptay, to talk about reaction to the election by the United States, the European Union, and others in the region. Did they welcome this outcome? Because we're hearing this phrase that some in the region and, of course, here in the United States are worried about the so-called Putinization of the Turkish political system.
I actually believe that not many heads of government in Europe or here in the United States as well, the White House, they haven't made phone calls yet to congratulate anybody because there is no clear winner of the Turkish elections. There's a first party, which is the AKP, which has won a plurality of the votes, but it hasn't won the majority of the votes or the seats in the parliament for that purpose to form government. And it's great, Carol, that you mentioned Putin because Putin was the first head of state to call Erdogan and congratulate him. And I think he did not call him to say, well done. He called it to say, how do you lose elections, given that elections are not known to be free and fair in Russia? But obviously, this is really a great test of Turkish democracy. These were free and fair elections, and we're not surprised. In the short term, I think what the elections results show also is not that all good, but perhaps, unfortunately, also some economic and maybe political instability in the sense that Turkish markets have been very volatile after the elections because everybody was so used to Turkey having a single-party government, which for the markets meant that Turkey was predictable. So good for Turkish democracy in the long term, but in the short term, I think it's really not so positive news that you could see a period of economic and political instability. That's, in fact, part of a pattern of the past as well. As an historian, when I look at back at Turkish politics in the 20th century, whenever Turkey was governed by a coalition government, it generally went into a period of economic and political crises. And whenever the country had a single-party government, regardless of the idea, ideology, identity of that government, Turkey did exceptionally well. So the coalition may not be economically the best option going forward, although ultimately this is really a good test of Turkey's democracy.
We'll talk about a potential coalition in a minute, but first back to you, Sinan Ciddi, about reaction from overseas. And of course, as Soner said, people aren't calling either Erdogan or anyone else yet, but we're reading in the press that a more diverse parliament could actually reverse the current deterioration of relations between Turkey and the EU and perhaps Turkey and the United States. What do you think about that?
It's an interesting result that's come out. And when we're talking about Turkey's democratization and a clear victory for democracy and democratic traditions in Turkey, we should also qualify it by saying that the seats and the people who represent the seats in parliament now is one of the most representative parliaments of Turkey. And that's even more relevant because Turkey has the highest electoral threshold in the world in any political system. There is a 10% electoral barrier with which to cross. And if a party does not cross that, it doesn't get any seats in parliament. And that's seen by some as an undemocratic and unfair electoral barrier. It's essentially designed to keep extremist parties out. But nevertheless, despite that barrier, again, the main Kurdish party, the People's Democracy Party, managed to cross the threshold overwhelmingly by gaining nearly just above 13% of the vote. So that speaks very strongly to the nature of the democratic traditions that Turkey is represented here. In terms of sort of how this is perceived by the United States in Europe, I think this is seen as very positive. They were ambivalent about where Erdogan was taking Turkey and where Turkey's policies towards the region and immediate crises such as the ensuing crises in Syria and the battle against ISIS was ensuing. They were thinking that Erdogan was not a person that could be counted on. So the initial reaction from the powers in Europe and the powers in Washington are that this is something to be congratulated, simply because Erdogan is no longer in a singular position to just dominate the political field. But having said that, I agree with Soner on this point, that this does send a very unstable picture, potentially, simply because who is going to be in power and who is going to be determining and making foreign policy and steering Turkey's foreign policy towards some of the immediate hotspots that we have that Turkey has been asked to participate and contribute towards, such as Turkey's support towards the crisis in Syria and how to deal with ISIS.
We'll talk about a potential coalition and international implications of the elections in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Sinan Jiddi. He's a visiting assistant professor at Georgetown University and director of the Institute for Turkish Studies, from whom you just heard. And Soner Çaptay. He's a senior fellow and director of the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. That's a think tank based here in Washington. And we are discussing the significance and implications of the Turkish elections, in which the governing AKP, or Justice and Development Party, of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan lost its majority in parliament. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or connect with us on Facebook via Carol Castiel VOA, or send an email to encounter@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Well, back to you, Soner Çaptay, to talk about the so-called Kurdish victory, the fact that the Kurdish party met the threshold and has a number of seats in parliament. Talk about the significance of that. And also the coalition building process henceforth. How do you see that shaping up? How will Erdogan reach out, and who might he have as partners?
Great question. So the Kurdish party in Turkey for a very long time ran on a narrowly Kurdish nationalist agenda, narrowly for the rest of the country, meaning it just was focused on promoting rights for Kurds, but really did not have an opinion on many other issues, economy, politics, foreign policy, broader Turkish context. So this time they did something very different. They decided to become not the party of Kurds, but the party of Turkey. And they reached out to the country's ethnic and political minorities and the liberals, and they succeeded. Their vote tally more than doubled. They went from being a party of 6%, therefore failing this high 10% electoral threshold necessary to enter the parliament. They reached 13%, well surpassing the threshold, surprising many analysts. They have 80 seats out of 550. They are the third largest bloc. You may dislike Kurdish politics, but you cannot ignore them anymore. The significance of it is that the HDP's alliance with the liberals, which has also carried the liberals into the parliament for the first time in Turkey, has huge significance for the Kurds. It makes their debate central to Turkey. Every Turkish party now has to face Kurds' demands and talk to them in the coalition government. If they want the Kurdish party in, they'll have to meet Kurdish demands at least halfway. The other significance of it, as I said, is that the Kurdish party was able to enter the parliament through the support of the liberals, who are now in the Turkish parliament represented. This is probably the most diverse Turkish parliament ever. It's the better representative than it has ever been. It's yet not perfectly representative, but 20% women, which is the same ratio as the percentage of women in the U.S. Congress. It has members of Turkey's ethnic and religious minorities, including Armenians and Syriac Christians. And I think this is very good news for Turkey moving forward. But the liberal contingency which got into the parliament is, of course, realizing that they now have a voice. I think going forward, this is going to be a very interesting parliament to watch. It will have a real group of liberals, not only in the Kurdish Liberal Alliance of People's Democratic Party, known as HDP, but also in the secular leftist party, known as Republican People's Party, also known as CHP. This is the second largest bloc in the parliament. It has 130 seats out of 550 and received 25% of the vote. So you got a larger Kurdish voice, which matters, and for the first time, a liberal voice. Coming to the question of coalition alternatives. So you have four parties. None of them has majority of the seats. They all need somebody else to build government. And they have divergent views on many issues. But there's a riddle in mathematics. It's called the farmer's riddle. The farmer has to take a bale of hay, a sheep, and a wolf across a river. He has a boat. He can only take two at a time. This is how Turkish coalition forming is going to go. Okay. You can't match every party with every other because some parties have opposing views. So on the Kurdish issue, for example, Turkish nationalists and Kurdish nationalists cannot be on the same boat. And on Erdogan's role, once again, parties won't agree. So I think we're entering a terrain of political uncertainty, just in the way farmer's puzzle would take people a lot of time to figure out.
So a terrain of political uncertainty. But back to you, Sinan Ciddi. Can you speculate on how you think the coalition might play out between the AKP and these other groups that Soner very well defined, and also on the Kurdish victory, how significant do you think that is?
I think for most of us, and especially people who follow Turkey or people who are interested in Turkey, these are going to be complicated times. I think for the last 13 years, we've been lucky because there's been one identifiable government and party and political leadership of Turkey that we can easily identify and point out. Now that seems to be less and less certain. So following Turkish politics is possibly going to resemble what it used to look like in the 1990s, whereby governments could change and fall and topple and come back with new ones, with multiple political actors. So in terms of coalition building sort of speculations, I mean, I think we will have to see what will come out about this. I think it's very difficult to say so. But if I may just point out one thing on this end, you know, game theorists would love this. If you have the sort of variables to look at in the field and you're interested in game theory, you would have a sort of a nice field day trying to see how this might play out. From the perspective of the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the best scenario right now for him is a situation whereby none of the parties in parliament are able to agree and form a government. And the reason for that is because as things stand, he is not able to get to where he wants to be, which is a strong president with constitutionally mandated executive powers reminiscent of Vladimir Putin. And he's not likely to get that. And if there is a coalition formed with or without the AKP, the big problem is any of the parties joining the AKP in the coalition will want to go out after certain things, such as allegations of corruption against the AKP, as well as Tayyip Erdogan and his family. There are sort of retributions that they would like to seek out against how the government dealt with, for example, the Gezi protests back in 2013. There is the whole issue of foreign policy in terms of how Erdogan's government sort of estranged and left behind the Kurds in Kobani. You know, people who voted against the AKP are very, very sort of passionate and angry and would like to see the AKP and Erdogan pay a price for this. So if there is a coalition formed, it will require that the AKP and some of its members be sort of hunted down by the judicial authorities, by prosecutors, and Erdogan doesn't want to see that happen, obviously. So the clear alternative is Erdogan could just basically wait and try and influence it such that a coalition government is not formed. And then after 45 days, he may be in a position to call for fresh elections, which is the only outlier I see that will allow elections to go forward once again in a way that may allow the AKP to increase its votes. Now, that is a huge risk. There's no certainty of outcome on there. But allowing a coalition government to form is likely to undermine a lot of AKP priorities. So that's my speculation about coalition formation. With your other two questions, I'll be very brief about those. In terms of what it means for the Kurdish party right now, it's a huge responsibility for the Kurdish parties. Many voters voted outside of their comfort zones for the Kurdish HDP party because they didn't want Erdogan and the AKP to be in parliament with strong numbers. And the co-chairman, Selahattin Demirtas, has already said, we are aware of our responsibilities and we will try to make sure that we don't just remain focused on Kurdish issues. We will represent Turkey's multitude of opinions, whether it be LGBT issues, whether it is environmental issues, whether it is transparency and restoring Turkey's rule of law issues. So that's a huge responsibility for the HDP to maintain.
Turning back to you, Soner Çaptay, to talk more about how Turkey might change or what impact this will have, if any, on Erdogan, on the AKP, because as you both said, I mean, there has been so much, you know, censorship, repression of freedom of expression, even this slow but apparent Islamization of society, where we know that Turkey is a very secular country. Some are feeling that it's just going too much in the other direction. To what extent do you think some of these trends will be affected just as a result of these elections? Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I think one way to characterize what happened in Turkey in the last decade is that it's run by a socially conservative government, which has authoritarian tendencies. I think what we have seen in Turkey is that the AKP still is the most popular party. It's won majority in the parliament. It may not form next government, or it may, depending on how these coalition permutations work. And in politics, I think a no is never a no. It's always a no or a yes, depending on what circumstances lead to. So all these parties, which now are telling each other that they're impossible to work with, could end up having a government. But assuming that the AKP ends up in government or not, the question is, The party is still very popular. It's supported by 40% of the Turks, and it represents a certain vision of society, Turkey moving forward. And for the last 13 years, that vision dominated Turkey, not because it ever had a majority of the popular vote, but because of the fact that the electoral threshold barred smaller parties from the parliament. And with never a majority of the popular vote, the AKP dominated the legislature and imposed its vision on the rest of the society. Turkey is a very split place of visions, lifestyles, ideas, ideologies, and identities. And I think the rest of the society has made a comeback because of the fact that this is parliament now allows four parties as opposed to three. When it's a three-party alignment where the Kurdish nationalists failed the threshold, the AKP always ended up with a majority of the seats. Now, for the first time, it's not a dominant force. So it has to work with others, just as the others have to work with it. The takeaway of this conversation is there are these different visions of Turkey and the role of religion in that country. The AKP and its supporters want to see a big role for religion, maybe a central role. And there are many others who are uncomfortable with that. So it's time for these two parts of Turkey to come and work together, and the arithmetics in the parliament dictate that.
Back to you, Sinan Ciddi. And that's because there's still the question of this presidential system that the opposition parties have joined together to oppose Erdogan's plans to shift Turkey from a parliamentary to a presidential system. What does this electoral setback to Erdogan mean for his aspirations of turning the parliamentary system in Turkey to a presidential system where he would have more power, presumably?
Essentially, it means it's dead on arrival. The dreams of transforming Turkey into a presidential system that was designed and envisioned to promote Erdogan to very much of a one-man show, an authoritarian one-man show where all the institutions and all the departments of the and the agencies of the state service one man's vision are effectively gone. The parliamentary arithmetic is not conducive to fulfilling that whatsoever. This is a huge body blow, and that's one of the things we shouldn't underestimate. This is something that the incumbent party or his party, AKP, is trying to play down, saying, you know, we're still the majority party, we still have the plurality of the seats in parliament. You know, they're finding it hard to express that 60% of voters and the seats represented in parliament right now are saying to the AKP, we don't agree with that vision. They're really finding it hard to internalize this. And as a result, and built on that, not only is this dream dead, what the AKP is really fearful of, and I think this is sometime in the coming, and many analysts have actually forewarned this, that the amount of power that has been lost in seats and in percentages is going to be also chased up by the number of prosecutors, the number of journalists coming back, criticizing the AKP, opening up old books in terms of covered up general audit reports of government spending, a lot of corruption scandals and allegations which were previously kept under wraps because of the overwhelming authority of the AKP are now going to come back and haunt them. So it's not the fact that I think that the AKP's dreams of transforming the Turkey into a presidential system are dead, but it's also the backlash that may come back from this. This is extremely precarious for any AKP operative or incumbent in the past or present, simply because there are so many circles within Turkey, whether it's the civil society, whether it's former government agents, or whether it's the judiciary in Turkey, will come back to seek justice and seek actual retribution possibly for possible things that they felt harmed against in the past.
And a last quick word from you, Senator Çağatay, with regard to this so-called dead on arrival, Erdogan's dream of creating a presidential system.
For the time being, this is gone because the electorate has vetoed it by significantly withdrawing its support from AKP. But it doesn't mean that Erdogan cannot stage a comeback. He is Turkey's best politician ever. He has won three consecutive elections, altogether 10 polls, including three nationwide local elections, two referendum, one presidential election. This is the first one that he did not win, but also did not lose. His party is still the largest, so he could stage a comeback. It's yet too early to be said.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Sinan Ciddi. He's visiting assistant professor at Georgetown University and the director of the Institute for Turkish Studies, and Soner Çağatay. He's senior fellow and director of the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jiang Wong, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.